Hi, ladies. It's Mrs. Horowitz talking, speaking from my kitchen at 3910 Labyrinth Road. And I want you to know that I'm missing you all very much. I'm missing seeing your faces and teaching you face to face. And I will miss hearing your interesting questions and insightful questions. I'm very happy if anyone is interested in calling me or in emailing me at ghorowitz@bcyakov.net or at my home phone at 410-358-8645. If you have questions, I'll try to answer them in the next class. I'm going to teach now for about 20 to 25 minutes. I want to start going over the periodic table. I'm not alone in my house. You might hear some pitter-patter and some little voices, my grandchildren. I hope it will not interrupt what we're doing. We finished with electron dot diagrams and electron configurations and orbital filling diagrams. And we did take a little bit of a look at our periodic table of elements. That's really what we're going to focus on for the next while, to understand the periodic table, to understand the elements and how they fall into their particular groups. There was a point where chemists realized that there were similarities among elements, and they wanted to classify them and put them in some sort of neat, systematic table. The first man who did this was a man by the name of Mendeleev, M-E-D-E-L-E-E-V. And Mr. Mendeleev arranged elements by atomic weight with similar properties next to one another. And he actually understood enough to leave blanks when he thought that there would be other elements that would be found, that would be discovered one day. And he predicted properties of those elements that were actually missing. And he was largely correct, not completely correct, but largely correct. After Mr. Mendeleev was a man by the name of Mr. Moseley, M-O-S-E-L-E-Y, Moseley. And he actually used X-rays to find not the atomic weight, but the atomic number. Mr. Moseley arranged the periodic table by atomic number. Remember, atomic number is the number of protons in the nucleus. And he arranged the table by atomic number. And it was more accurate than Mendeleev. And we're going to see, as we understand the periodic table and as we then go further to use the periodic table to understand chemical bonding, we'll understand why Moseley is more correct than Mendeleev. The periodic table of elements as we know it will have, as you will see, does have certain properties that repeat at regular intervals. The rows across the periodic table are called periods, and the columns down, which are the ones with similar properties, for example, hydrogen, then you see underneath lithium, and underneath sodium, and then underneath potassium, etc., that is called a group. And the groups have similar properties, as we will see. So if I would say to you, what element is in period 3, group 7? You would look at period 3 and group 7, which is chlorine. Okay? Another way of saying group 7 of the third period. If you have the periodic table in front of you, which I hope you do, if you don't, stop the recording and go get a periodic table, either the one that I gave you in class or the one that's in the book. Okay, so you can use your book for this. All periodic tables are basically the same. They're a little bit different. The structure is the same. You might have a little different colors. You might have different different size symbols or where the symbols are put. But basically all periodic tables are the same. So you should have a periodic table in front of you. And we're going to talk about the different groups in the periodic table. So if you have the periodic table in front of you and look all the way to the left side, where hydrogen is at top, then lithium, sodium, potassium, rubidium, cesium, and francium. That group is group one. Okay? And the group next to it, beryllium, magnesium, calcium, strontium, barium, and radium, is group two. And they are both metals. And the truth of the matter is, if you continue moving to the right through the midsection, that what I call the D section, we called it a D section in class when we were talking about orbital filling diagrams and electron configurations. If you move across the red section in the periodic table that I gave you through zinc, cadmium, mercury, and copernicium, all the way through that, those are all metals. Now, past that, there are still some metals, but I'm not going to talk about that yet. Just those are all metals, different types of metals, which we'll talk about, but those are all metals. And there are a few more besides that, but those are the main metals. Let's talk about the characteristics of metals. First of all, metals have luster, L-U-S-T-E-R. They have luster, which means they are shiny. That is the reason why people use metals for jewelry, because they're shiny, they're pretty, and they're all solid at room temperature. The only metal that is not a solid at room temperature is mercury, Hg, mercury, which is atomic number 80. Atomic number 80 is a liquid at room temperature. So they're shiny. Metals are shiny, number one. Number two, and these are the physical properties of metals. Number two, they are malleable. M-A-L-L-E-A-B-L-E. They are malleable. And what malleable means is they're able to be hammered into thin sheets. We have aluminum foil. There is gold foil. Okay? Metals are able to be hammered into sheets. They are malleable, another physical property of metals. Of course, it would not be a physical property of oxygen. Okay, oxygen cannot be hammered into sheets. Oxygen is not malleable. Okay, so metals are lustrous, right? They have luster. That was the first characteristic. The second characteristic is they are malleable. And the third characteristic is that they are ductile. D-U-C-T-I-L-E. They are ductile. And what ductile means is that metals are able to be drawn into wire. They're able to be drawn into wire. So you have copper wire and gold wire, although gold is a little bit soft for that, but gold can be drawn into a wire, aluminum wire, etc. Okay, so those are three physical properties. And another property, which is physical somewhat, is that metals are good conductors of heat and electricity. Okay, so we have that they have luster, they're malleable, they're ductile, and that they are good conductors of heat and electricity. Now let's talk about some of their chemical properties. Metals, all metals, have one, two, or three electrons in their outermost shell. Remember we discussed the outermost shell are the S and P sublevels. The outermost S and P sublevels of metals all have one, two, or three electrons. Okay? And that's going to be very, very important when we talk about how metals bond. They have one, two, or three electrons in their outermost energy level. Those electrons in their outermost energy level, which are the electrons that we put in the electron diagram, those electrons are called valence electrons, V-A-L-E-N-C-E, valence electrons. Metals have one, two, or three, depending on the metal, they have one, two, or three valence electrons. One, two, or three electrons in their outermost shell. And as I said before, those electrons play a very, very important role in the way metals react, how they form chemical bonds. So those are chemical properties. In addition to that, metals can be easily corroded. And what corrosion, which I'm sure you've heard the word before, What it means is that metals can be easily eaten away at. They can be corroded. They can easily be made into a metallic compound, which means they bond together with other elements. And with that bonding together of other elements causes the metal to deteriorate, to corrode. So that's one chemical property. Another chemical property is that metals easily combine with oxygen. When metals combine with oxygen or with anything, when anything combines with oxygen, it's a reaction called oxidation. And metals that bond together with oxygen form what we call oxides, O-X-I-D-E-S. They form compounds called oxides. And two examples of that, which you are familiar with, maybe you don't know who you are, but you are. One of them is called iron oxide. Iron oxide, which is also known as rust. Rust is when iron and oxygen bond together. And there's a special way to write that chemically. And I'm going to tell you exactly how to write it so that you can put it in your notes. Iron oxide as a compound is written capital F, small e, subscript 2, capital O, subscript 3. We read that Fe2O3. Again, it's capital F, small e, subscript 2, capital O, subscript 3. We read that Fe2O3, and that is called iron oxide. We'll understand how we name them in a while. Hopefully, we'll do that face to face. And that is rust. Rust is an oxidation reaction that destroys the iron. It destroys the metal. We know that rust destroys metal. The other oxidation or oxide that you are familiar with or perhaps familiar with is zinc oxide. Zinc oxide, which is Zn, Z, capital Z, small n, capital O. Again, Z, capital Z, small n, capital O, zinc oxide, is actually an oxide that protects the zinc. Aluminum oxide is another example. Al2O3, capital A, small l, subscript 2, capital O, small 3, subscript 3. Aluminum oxide is also an oxide that protects the aluminum. Okay, it covers over the aluminum and it actually protects the aluminum. So metals can be corroded. They can combine with oxygen. And they also, number three, is they react violently with water. The best example of that is sodium. Sodium, when the element sodium is put into water, it's explosive. Okay. And that it explodes in water because there was a tremendous release of gas that catches fire with heat that's released. So there's a tremendous explosion when sodium is put into water. And that's why sodium, when it's as an element, is never found by itself in nature because it would be explosive. And besides that, besides it not being ever found in nature, it has to be stored. When it's stored as an element, it has to be stored under oil. So why would it be stored under oil? Think for a minute. Why under oil? Right, because oil doesn't mix with water. So if you put the sodium into oil, there's not a chance that it's going to come in contact with water. So it's rare that we have sodium by itself, but if it is by itself, it's stored under oil so that it doesn't come into contact with water and cause explosion. Okay, so those are the, besides the metals having one, two, or three electrons in their outermost shell, one, two, or three valence electrons, they can be corroded easily, they combine with oxygen easily, and they react violently with water. Now what I would like to do is go through the different groups and just give you some basic characteristics of the different groups of metals and nonmetals on the periodic table. So again, if you look at the periodic table and you look at group one, at the top of group one, there's hydrogen. Now, in our periodic table, the hydrogen is green. The outline is green. The reason why it's green is because it is similar to the elements on the right side of the table, because hydrogen is not a metal. Hydrogen is not a metal. Now, they have found deep underground, they have found some hydrogen which has many metallic characteristics, and they call it metallic hydrogen, but mostly hydrogen is not metallic and it's not a metal. It's in group 1A because it has one electron in its outermost shell together with all the other elements in group 1A, as we talked about in class, that each one, the last electron is on the S1 sublevel. So that's why hydrogen is there, but hydrogen is not a metal. So we're just going to kind of like look aside of the hydrogen for now and look at group 1 metals, starting group 1A metals, which is lithium, sodium, potassium, rubidium, cesium, and francium. Those are all group 1A metals. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about group 1A metals. First of all, they're called alkali metals. A-L-K-A-L-I. Alkali metals. They're very, very soft. They're the softest metals. They are the least dense metals. They're shiny silver in color. And they are the most active, chemically active metals. And they're all similar chemically because they all end on, as we said, the S1 sublevel. Right next to it are the group 2A alkaline earth metals, A-L-K-A-L-I-N-E, alkaline earth metals. They are slightly harder and more dense. Of course, that's comparing it to the group 1A. Doesn't mean they're hard and dense. It means that they are more hard and more dense than the group 1A metals. They have a very high melting and boiling point. They are very chemically active. And they all have the similarity that their last electron is in the S2 sublevel. After you have group 1A metals and group 2A metals, the alkali metals and the alkaline metals, you then have the middle group. If you see, it's all red. The red outlines elements. Those elements are called transition metals. And besides those, there are some which your periodic table calls post-transition metals, which are like the, they're kind of like teal blue. They call them post-transition metals. We're just going to call them transition metals. They're also transition metals. The only one that I wouldn't call a transition metal is aluminum. And aluminum is just a regular metal in the way we're going to deal with it. But other than that, all the metals that your periodic table calls a post-transition metal, we're just going to say are transition metals. Transition metals do not change properties to any large degree as we move across the periodic table. When I say move across the periodic table, I'm talking about moving from left to right. As we move from left to right, as we're going towards the nonmetals, the transition metals do not change their properties very much. They also have a high melting point. And as you do move across, they are more hard and more brittle than the alkali or alkaline metals, but they are not hard and brittle. They're just less soft than the alkali and alkaline metals. So they are more hard and more brittle. To the right of the transition metals, or as your periodic table calls post-transition metals, are nonmetals. The green outlined elements are, well, it's two different color greens. Look closely. And you'll see like a hunter green, a darker green, and then a lighter green. So the hunter green, the little bit of a darker green, is called a metalloid. Try to find the metalloids. The first one is boron, atomic number 5. Boron, atomic number 5. I hope you all see it. That is a metalloid. If you go diagonally, you will see more metalloids. Boron, silicon, arsenic, tellurium, then go to the left. Antimony, germanium. Those, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Six. Boron, silicon, arsenic, tellurium, antimony, and germanium. Those six are metalloids. And we're going to talk about metalloids in a little bit. Okay, metalloids are between metals and nonmetals. To the right of those, starting with carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine. On the next column, phosphorus, sulfur, chlorine, arsenic. I'm sorry, not arsenic. Carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, sulfur, selenium, tellurium, iodine, bromine, chlorine, and fluorine. Those are nonmetals. Astatine, nonmetal. And helium, neon, argon, krypton, xenon, and radon. Those are all noble gases, which are nonmetals. Okay, so you have alkaline earth metals. And you have the transition metals. Then you have the post-transition metals, which we're also calling transition metals. Then you have the metalloids, starting with boron, going diagonally. Then you have the nonmetals and the noble gases, which are also nonmetals. Okay. I'm going to stop there. That's a lot. It's a lot of information. I would like you to look it over. It would probably be a good idea for you to read the chapter on the periodic table in your book. Tomorrow we will talk about nonmetals, halogens, metalloids, and noble gases, which will be another large chunk of material. I don't want to overwhelm you in one day. Again, if you have any questions, you can email me at ghorowitz@basiakov.net, or you can certainly call at 410-358-8645. During the day, I'm usually in school. It's very quiet there, so I'm very happy for you to call. The office at 443-548-7700, and the secretary will put you through to me if I am available. If not, please don't give up. Please call back. I will look forward to hearing from you. Have a wonderful night. Say a kapitel tehillim, daven well, and I hope to see you all soon.